You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, it's the weekend and it's Tops Off for Tiago Day. It's John Gibbons and I'm joined by Lizzie Doyle, by Martin Fitzgerald, by Jay McKenna and by Ben Johnson. And Lily said ever there because it's come up on your team. That'd have been good. Ben, I'll come to you. How on is your top at the moment, metaphorically?
It's been on and off. Highs, I've ridden the highs. Yeah, it's been good, hasn't it? There's nothing like a little transfer, get the blood pumping. And I've seen a few bits and bobs before, but it is like one of the biggest signings we've made, you know, in terms of like established player. And it just feels really odd, to be honest. It's going to be dead funny when he doesn't get his game, when it's our big games. And we just go with our absolute plodders who run everywhere. And he's on the bench. Like, what the fuck? We've got Milner doing 90.
Yeah, I've been getting excited about this one, Jay. I tried not to get too excited too early because, not in the day. I mean, literally, I have a shirt off on a show before, but I meant, you know, a couple of weeks ago where we weren't quite sure. But today, I mean, I've watched that video of him, that assist where he does that volley down the things for Bayern and then Neuer runs over to him. I've watched that a lot, I'll be honest with you.
Mate, we've all been watching the YouTube clips today, little bits on Twitter, thinking, oh my God, he looks phenomenal. Jürgen Klopp's not going to let him leave his own half. His job's just going to be the halfway line, and that's about it. No, no, look. It is good, and you know, I'm with John all there. It's exciting because you're seeing a player coveted by lots of clubs at the top of his game, just won a Champions League, and he leaves the Champions League winners to come to Liverpool. You know, that sends a statement. And it's also, you know, some people might have been thinking, well, we want a centre-half, or we want this player, or we want a player in this position. But I think it sends a message to lots of the players. You know, here's a proven player coming in now. They'll all up the game a bit again. You know, it makes the midfield, maybe you get a bit more from midfielders. It gives you some other options. But for me, it is just a statement of where we are as a club now. And that's what, in a way, it almost reminds you of that, doesn't it? You almost forget, you know, you won the Champions League 2 years ago and you won the league last year. We almost forget these things have happened and it's a statement of where we are as a club, and that's what I'm excited about now, that clubs, players want to come to us. We're the destination club now, where the, you know, you leave someone else to come to Liverpool to win more things. So that I'm more positive of where the club maybe sees itself going as well. But it's always nice to get a fantastic player in, and evidently it's what I used to hate about Man United. That Man United would see boss players being around that maybe they didn't even need, maybe they could do without, but they went and signed them anyway because they were available and they stopped them going to a rival. And that's what we've done today. So, yeah, good business all round. And tops off for Thiago if you're in Gibbo's house later.
Or not. Or just in an office in town. It's completely fine. Big question is, though, Martin, is he good enough to get in Betty from Accounts' fantasy football team?
Not sure he's a fantasy football player, you know, but... Because you're after very specific things in a fantasy football midfielder. So you might want to go for Saka at Arsenal, or if it was last year, Todd Cantwell. But this isn't... I mean, why am I talking about this? This fella's won seven league titles on the spin. He's like the Phil Taylor of league titles. And we've just brought him in, and they've all just won one. So, you know, that's the bit that I think, I mean, other than the fact that he's just a world-class player, and you got the sense just a little bit. It would just be good to have just to have a new face around who just made everyone else better. Is the sense that we have this fella in that is just used to winning the league, and he knows what it takes. And I think there's the stuff on the pitch, but I imagine, you know, what he's going to bring to a dressing room with that mentality is probably at least 50% of why they bought him.
Yeah, and I think that's fair, Lizzie. I think if you're a fella who's won 7 league titles on the bounce, you're not pissing around going to Goodison Park, are you? Do you know what I mean? You're going to places where he thinks he's got a great chance of making this 8. We all think that before we got him, and we've got an even better chance of it now.
Honestly, I think it's huge. And I think I saw someone say about how it's like the biggest signing in like their adult life. And I think when you think about it, like when we signed Suarez, he wasn't Luis Suarez who left for Barcelona. When we signed Torres, yeah, he wasn't the Torres who, you know, was 08, 09. I think like by signing someone in their absolute pomp, like I've not really seen that. Someone who's just won the Champions League. And I think what Martin's just said is right. Like he just wins league titles for fun and he's decided to come to us. Like I think it's a really big deal. And I think also what people aren't talking about is I think Bayern Munich, so alongside Liverpool and Man City, I think Bayern Munich are the next best team in Europe. Well, they are the best team in Europe at the moment. They've won the Champions League. We've just significantly weakened our European rivals' side as well as making us better. Do you know what I mean? So like we've just took like their best midfielder and they're going to go, you know, they'll be probably favourites or one of the favourites to win the Champions League this season as well. And I think that's been overlooked a little bit. I just think it's amazing all round, and like it would be hilarious if, like Ben said, it comes to Man United away and James Milner's doing 90 and Thiago's there scratching his head going, why am I playing Lincoln away? But hey, listen, Lincoln away could be on, we never know.
Could be. I mean, they can take the time with them a little bit, can't they, Ben? And, you know, jokes aside, you know, there's a lot of good midfielders in there already, and so he has got that luxury of being able to settle in, have a look what's what, understand what Jurgen Klopp wants from him, because none of us know yet exactly where he'll play, and there is no rush, you know, because we're not desperate because we got 99 points last year.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think the fact he trains under Guardiola, which although, you know, Liverpool and City are slightly different, they're similar ish in what they do with the ball at times, so, you know, I think he's coming from a position whereby he's not going to need as much bedding in as someone like Fabinho or someone else. And I think we've bought him. I said this a few weeks ago on a gutter show with Rob, one of the many where we were saying, are we going to buy Thiago? What's happening? When are we getting him? Blah, blah, blah. I think we've bought him with specific games in mind, with specific, you know, you look at this, you look at the charity here, for an example, Arsenal. You wouldn't expect Arsenal to do it, but 5 at the back, 4 in midfield, break us down. I think there's a specific role where they've thought we need someone who can play slightly different with the ball, who can play passes a little bit quicker out of midfield into feet. And I think one of the things that excites me is you see like Mo Salah when he plays with Naby, and he's like dead excited to be making the little runs, and they've got like a little partnership, and Sadio Mane, he's got a little one going as well. And I'm just excited to see who that's going to click with, you know what I mean? I can see him being busy with like one of them two, just like knocking about with them, and just like, yeah, you can just do that little run, I'll just plonk it right there for you, and, you know, in an impossible position for you to slot. And I think that's the exciting thing is we've got another way to break teams down. Now we've identified that we're going to need to alter the way we play slightly, I think. And I think, yeah, it's exciting. I think the only bit of thing that sort of sticks in your head, the only sort of regret for me is that he's one of them players who you want to see. Do you know what I mean? You want to physically see him in the flesh, how he plays. And I was talking to Neil about this the other day, about Alonso's debut against Norwich and how much that sort of reverberated around the ground in terms of what he did with the ball, how he plays the ball, the style of footballer he is. And that's the only little sort of sticking point for me. Is like I'd actually love to see him play footy in the flesh, and I just don't know when that's going to be. But I'll tell you what, we've got a hell of a lot more of a chance now than we did have yesterday.
It is funny because you mentioned that Alonso game because I didn't go to that. I was working a few Saturdays at the time. I was working in the Royal Court in town, and so you know I missed it. And all week it was like a boss gig you'd missed. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? It was like everyone had seen David Bowie on Saturday and you hadn't gone. And suddenly everyone's like, "Fucking Bowie was boss," and you had to admit that you weren't there. And it was all sorts of a bit embarrassing. So I think there is a sort of a real element to that. We all want to watch David Bowie, man. When are we going to be able to?
Xavi Alonso at the Free Trade Hall. I was there. Yeah, I think, you know, we're just going to have to wait for that, aren't we? I kind of got to the point where I sort of thought it wasn't going to happen. I don't really understand how transfers work because, you know, it kind of gets muted for you know, a good while. Then it dies down a bit. And you wonder, what's that bit that gets you over the line? Because it didn't really seem to be a financial thing. But I'm just glad it's happened. I'm glad it's happened that you know, we're going to see him. As I said before, I think the big thing is, and you don't want to read too much into the first game, but I do think that when you've won the league and when you want to try and do it again, you just need that extra impetus that you didn't have the year before to just push harder. And I think that can often come in the shape of a really great player that makes everyone, you know, look around the dressing room, look at the new boy. Everyone wants to prove themselves to him. He wants to prove himself to them. I think it's that dynamic that I'm looking forward to seeing. In the flesh, on the telly, on a stream, I don't care.
Jay, a couple of the guys have mentioned it about how excited the other players have been. You said, I don't know if you've seen the interview with Andy Robertson today where he's asked about it and he's trying to play it cool, but he just keeps laughing. Like he's almost like beaming, like, yeah, it's gonna be fun, boss. And have you seen him? Have you watched that clip? Do you know what I mean? And he's like, he's playing it down, but his face is telling a different story.
Yeah, you know what? I haven't seen it, but I've seen a few people tweeting about it, and that's interesting, that, isn't it? That even these players who've won it all know how elite in a player he is. Do you know what I mean? There's certain players at a level, and we might all think it's the Mbappes of the world and the Neymars and the Messis, and I'm sure that would get them excited, but that they're saying this of a player who largely is going to come into a team and do a lot of work, you know, do a lot of hard work for us, shows how much of a talent he is. We've obviously come up against him and they'll have seen him over the years playing for Bayern and when he was at Barca as well. So that excitement, I think Gerrard used to say this about new players, they test them almost kind of thing. But even Gerrard and Carragher lifted their game in training. This fella turned up and they were like, we'll show him what we're about. We'll show him that he's come to a big club kind of thing. So if it gets a few little extra bits out of these players, it's fantastic. Look at the Leeds game. You know, would you say to yourself, well, if Thiago could have played in that game, it'd have been very different. Arsenal in the Charity Shield, it'd have been very different. There's a bit there where some of them players maybe just, you know, it just gets them back into that groove of reminding themselves, you know, that they're at an elite club. They've got to be on it. This fella's come in. We've signed a top player to come in and play for us. We've all got to be on it. We've got to be doing our bit. But that they're excited as well. It's mad to think that they get excited as we do. I don't know whether Andy Robertson was running around his house with his top off or something earlier on, but that they're excited about it it's a big thing. And like John O's just said there, unfortunately, you won't get that excitement at a game. It would be fantastic, wouldn't it, to be turning up at Anfield in the next couple of weeks and Thiago getting announced and, you know, doing something in a game and him knowing he's at Liverpool as well. And, you know, hopefully spurring him on to be even better at us. So it's an exciting time. And I, you know, you'd only need to look as well at the reaction of other clubs' fans to us signing Thiago, or the idea that he wasn't coming to us. And now that he has, you know, everyone's digging the tweets out or they're trying to explain it away. I've seen poor David Downey having to explain how, like, their midfield and Everton's wasn't as good as the team that won the title, let alone now that they've just added Thiago, and he was accused of being negative. It's like, mate, you can support anyone in the world, but Thiago's adding something to your midfield. Yeah, you know, it's like this explaining away by other fans, or genuine disappointment from them that they haven't been able to get hold of him. So, you know, we should be pleased that we've got him, and we should be genuinely excited, as evidently Robbo is.
Lizzie, I know you've seen Robbo's little face because you sent it to me.
Yeah, it's brilliant. But there's a clip of Klopp as well in the same interview. So they sit down with Klopp and they sit down with Robertson, and they say, and Klopp is literally like the biggest teethy smile, and he's going, no, I can't end any speculation, but if something does happen, I suppose you will be first to know and all this. And it's basically him trying to say, he's like, you know, when you're doing that thing where you're like, don't tell anyone, and you're nodding your head and like trying to do it on the sly. That's exactly what Klopp and Robertson look like, the cheekiest, like on his smile. Like it just really made me laugh and smile today. So I think that they're dead excited too, which is great. And I think as well, keeping them on their toes is no bad thing. And I think, like, you can say they've won it all. Yeah, they've won. They've won the Champions League. They've won the league. They've won one of each. They've never had to go and defend a title. And I think that's a really hard ask now this fella's done it. And I think, you know, we've all heard that obviously City were the first team since United to defend a title. It's a really, really hard thing to do. And there's a reason why not many teams have done it. But when you add a fella like this, I think, God, it just makes you start to think, doesn't it? Like, just gets you dead excited for this. I can't stop smiling. And I think as well, a really quite important thing you'll see is that I imagine there probably won't be another centre-half that comes in now. And this might be a case of, with Thiago there and Gini hopefully not going, that Fabinho will probably be fourth-choice centre-half.
I mean, it will be interesting, Ben, to see what happens next. I mean, I don't want to be the parasite moving between cats, because, you know, who wants to be that? And I don't want to get into that too much either, because if anyone's not listened to the EPL show, they might think I'm as bananas as you are. But it'd be interesting to see what does happen next now, because we've been sort of fed the information as supporters that, oh, Liverpool need to sell to buy and things like that, and they haven't. Does that sort of suggest to you that there's something's, you know, on the cards and the confidence of getting something, or was that sort of nonsense all along, or do you think something will have to sort of happen elsewhere for him to fit in?
I read somewhere that the reason that it sort of accelerated as quickly as it did is that they were able to agree that the money would be split across the course of the contract. So I think it was 5 years or 4 year contract, and it was a quarterly figure, so I think it was 25 million quid, whatever that is, 4.5 million or four point whatever million a year, which is nothing. when you're putting that on your books, you've just got half of that fee for Lovren. You've lost a load of wages off your wage anyway. I think they'll end up getting someone else. I think they're looking to shift people on. I think they've probably just thought, you know what, if we're going to do this, we need to do it, because it's not fair on the player. We've told him we're going to box him off. And I think, I was wondering about this before, about how Liverpool decide at what point they deal and at what point they do. And I think ultimately it probably comes down to there's a value at which they think a player's worth, and then they look at what they can get him for. I know it's not about peeling the eyes out of the opposing team. It's about looking at what you think you can exploit from this transfer, and looking at your money and thinking, right, okay, this is defo value for money for us. So they're looking at Thiago. I think they're not that asked about the contract situation. And I think there's something about the way we work transfers out internally overrides a need to just scramble value and peels people's eyes out for it and create bad environments in which you've got to work. And I think the comments that Bayern was saying the other day about, you know, the teams are they're looking to wait till the last week of the transfer market, and they're going to try and get them for 15 million, and it's not fair, and it's not this, and it's not that. I think Liverpool want to be seen as a club who are good to deal with, who hold their position and hold their attitude in relation to what their players are worth, but have got a value at which they're prepared to do a deal. And it's irrespective, really, of the circumstance. Do you know what I mean? So I think they've looked at Thiago and thought, we can get this elite player for fuck all money. let's forget about the fact that we might be able to get him for even less money in 2 weeks. Let's just push the button and get him in, because why wouldn't we? And we can sell some pudding for 15 million. He's never going to play for us. We'll be nice about selling him. Oh, you're getting a great player, and oh, happy days. But Dan Kennett off Twitter done a list of the sales that we've done over the course of the last sort of 3 years that Edwards has pulled off. And you look at some of them and it's disgusting. It's an outrage. But we've probably done it really well. Oh, yeah, you want to play a lovely job? Oh, you're cracking, lads. Yeah, he'll cause you no problems. He'll be a bag of shit and he's never going to play. But that's a separate matter. Here he is. Gives you a dough. And I think there's a bit of that going on.
How do you want our Trustpilot ratings like?
Fucking boss customer service, but the product was useless.
Product, shocking. Shocking. Speaking of which, my just this is an aside, this has got no relevance to anything, but my wife bought me an enamel mug, right, off Amazon today. I'm going camping at the weekend. She said, yeah, I'll get you a mug, a little, and it'll be sad. It turns up today, it's like a fucking thimble. Honest to God, it's about that big. You could fit like a ship. I'll have another one. But anyway, that's us selling donkeys.
Are you going to take it?
Yeah, I'm taking it. I'm going to have espresso out of it. So now I've got to pack a big fucking espresso thing and everything.
Oh, defeats the object. That really was, by the way. I mean, Jay, it's a possibility that this is the chocolate money coming in. Do you know what I mean? I've not had my dairy milk yet. I get, you know, called the top red. Oh, but, man. You know, have you had it?
I've had, well, you fucking got photos, so I've had my fucking chocolate, so fuck you. Not that bitter, funny man. Mine came, although my missus tried to send me chocolate away. My season ticket's not in my name. And we keep getting posts coming through, it has. And my missus is getting fed up with it. And she was going out the house. This is an aside now. Going out the house and the postman come. And she went, oh no, he doesn't live here. And I went to her, I'll see you later. And then I sat back down and I thought, but yeah, that's my fucking chocolate. Went back out.
She runs down the street after.
No, I shouted there. She was halfway down. The posting was further down. Jono knows our street. Said to her, I said, what's the name of that? Blah, blah. She went, yeah. I said, it's my fucking season ticket name. Go and get it. So she had to go and get the postman and explain. My season ticket's not in my name. I told you that person doesn't live here, but they do. Can I have that mail? And it was my bar of chocolate. So yeah, maybe it is the Cadbury money, John. Maybe your chocolate that you haven't got yet is... help tip the scales in favour of getting Thiago. But it is. The club is obviously doing smart business. And as Jono says there, you can get a player like Thiago for £27 million. You don't say no to that. If Thiago comes to Liverpool, plays with Liverpool for a year, doesn't nearly settle in, doesn't like it, doesn't fancy it, it's next to not on its cost us, and we'll sell him for the same amount of money or more anyway. So it's really good business by the club. Seen other little bits of rumours about what we'll do, but we'll sell someone. You know, we'll put Grujic, I don't even know how you say his name, Grujic out on loan, Harry Wilson maybe sold, Brewster, whatever, and that money will just keep coming back in and we'll just keep recycling it to sign better players each time. So the club isn't going to be bullied by this and is doing what it can in a transfer market that, whilst they look very rich, they're not compared to others. So, you know, getting, that's another element of this Thiago transfer for us, where we're like, well, we've signed an elite player and we haven't had to go and do the 50, 60, 70 million pounds transfer that lots of clubs are doing for that level of player. He was coming to the end of his contract and he wanted to come to Liverpool. Because evidently he could have gone to lots of places, lots of teams would have had him signing and offering a lot of money, but obviously he wants to come to Liverpool. Liverpool have done a deal. So, you know, we should be pleased, and I'm sure maybe he's probably got a nice bar of chocolate that says John Gibbons on the envelope right now.
I mean, what a lovely treat for him that would be. Okay, we'll leave it there for the Thiago chat. I'm sure there'll be plenty more over the next few days ago as it's all signed, sealed and delivered. But in the meantime, coming up, we've got Andy Heaton talking to Ellis Barry about a new project he's doing in his home of Liverpool. And then we've got Anita from Gold Diggers with Neil on Chelsea, looking ahead from the Chelsea point of view to the weekend's action. And then we'll be back with the five in total, talking about the Chelsea game as well and how we think Sunday it'll go. So, yeah, loads to look forward to. Don't go anywhere.
It's Andy Heaton for the weekend, and I'm delighted to be joined via Zoom by Chef Ellis Barry, new proprietor of Liverpool on the Albert Dock. Now, I was trying to get you on to talk about the offerings of Liverpool, fine cuisine, Liverpool culture, but fuck it, let's talk about Thiago. What a morning, eh? Bloody hell.
It's all about priorities, mate. Who cares about opening a new restaurant on the dock?
That's it. And I gotta get it straight. I tell you what, though, you know what I mean? If you see him bouncing through the restaurant there after a reservation, lady, you best give me a bell. You know what I mean?
I know. Yeah. Well, they best. I tell you, I've been supporting this club for the 30 odd years now. I'm hoping they're gonna start supporting me.
Well, I tell you what. I mean, joking aside, and it's serious about this for a minute. Because we've been talking a long while about the planning for Liverpool and how long it's gone on getting it done. And obviously with the situation with COVID and one thing and the other, it's been a massive drag getting it. Not a drag, but it's been a massive effort to actually get the doors open, hasn't it?
Yeah, well, I'd say that as well. I reckon I've been at this for about 3 years. Do you know what I mean? I think I first talked about the getting down here before my son was born. And he's 3 in October. So it has been a drag. I think a lot of it's down to, like, I've never opened a new restaurant. I've only evolved an old one, evolved the Marengrass, you know, from a greasy spoon onwards. So it's a completely different ball game, and I've had to do it. Like, me and Liam have kept it between me and him. We've not brought anybody else into the fold to get it done. So that's harder because there's not been, like, that backlog of cash in the background, you know, to try and, which gets it through quicker. So we've been, we've learnt loads doing it, you know, we've learnt loads along the way. But it's, yeah, proper standard Barry Bros, you know, 3 years, but we're finally there.
I mean, can you tell us a little bit about, you didn't decide to open in possibly the worst part, the most difficult test in time in history. I mean, seriously, for a sec, was it, because I want to talk about the restaurant in a minute and your journey and like what people can expect from it, because I'm really excited by it, and I made up the, you know, I was delighted when I found out it was still opening despite what's happened. But was there ever a period where you thought, am I fucking mad?
Yeah, I've had that issue for the past, I'd say, I think 30 years. But that, I live in that sort of idea of that that's fine. It's fine to be a bit nervous and it's fine to be mad and a bit like sort of, I live in that fear of the unknown, do you know what I mean? I'm almost conditioned to it. I don't know whether that's like the industry and the trade has sort of geared me up for it. But I mean, we opened the Marengrass, mate, right smack bang just after the recession in 2008. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, yeah, and I think we must get that from my dad and go, oh, my dad's like, oh, yeah, what a perfect time to set up a business. So, do you know what I mean? So it's just like, we've lived in it, you know, and so for me, look, and I'm not even messing here. If it goes Pete Tong, I don't mind. Do you know what I mean? For me, it's like, so what? You know, I'll crack on, get up and get going again. You know, so I'd rather just keep going, head down, push forward. And at least I've tried in life, do you know what I mean? And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. If it does, great. You know, but I love what I do, man. I love the food. I love the standing on the stove and just, you know, I was in here the other night on my own about like till about 10:30, just filleting fish on Tuesday night, ready for Wednesday service, and it's bliss. Just there thinking, cutting fish up, loving it. Do you know what I mean?
How did it feel when you finally got everything through and you opened the doors for the first time? Like on the Albert, on the Albert Dock, which in itself is an iconic location in Liverpool, which, if we're being totally honest, needs a bit of a kick up the arse.
Yeah, definitely, and I think what's good is that it is getting that kick up the arse. Do you know what I mean? I think like everybody there at the minute, like the new landlords, the new businesses they're bringing in, they're really pushing to make it different. They got rid of all these big massive sites which are taking up loads of space and doing crap food and crap hospitality, and they made them smaller. They brought in more independent restaurant groups and a lot of locals as well. You know, like me, I'm South Liverpool lad. You know, you got my Ray there. Madre, they're all South Liverpool lads as well. You've got that Rough and Maid, they were on Penny Lane. You know, so they're starting to think out that actually Liverpool is a Liverpool city, and Scousers support Scousers through thick and thin. It's in our blood, you know, but we've never really had that sort of massive independent scene, even though people, you know, we're getting in now with the food, a lot of casual dining. It's still not been massively like a massive independent scene that what you might see down in London or in Manchester and that. But it's getting there now, where you see like the opportunities are granted.
I can maybe say this way you can, but you can't really overstate how much these businesses need support. And when I say support, I'll say it as it is: spend your fucking money in the right places. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's dead easy to talk about independence and aren't they great and all that.
You look at what just happened then, and like I was speaking to you like at the start of this coronavirus. we were like, you know, the amount of hospitality business which are about to go under, which was bonkers. You know, it's mad. It's actually quite nice that the Tory government have taken on a socialist view, really, and got the finally realised that socialism is the only way forward.
Well, I mean, I can't see that lasting long, to be honest, we'll see where we go.
I'll be paying it back soon.
But even before this corona thing, what always struck me, really frustrated the life out of me, is that, you know, everyone would go, oh, this place is great, you know, we should go there, blah, blah, blah. And you walk past and after, like, the initial hit, they're empty. Do you know what I mean? Like, people, like, talking about it, but don't, like, actually, you know, supporting it. So, to try and give people an idea of what to expect, like, what's different? I mean, you've obviously, the name is obviously the Welsh for Liverpool.
Yeah.
But when you walk through the doors, what's kind of, like, what's the concept around it? What are we expecting?
Well, look, with me, it's like every ingredient, I try and make a bespoke dish around the best ingredients that I can get locally. I do heavily use that A55 as a bit of a silk road between Wales and Liverpool. But the idea with Liverpool was to really talk about the history of Liverpool and tie in the links of Scotland, Ireland, the Welsh influx, the Nordic influx into it. You know, so we're looking at produce and recipes from years ago and bringing it back. You know, I've reinvented the Liverpool tart to something which I think is a lot more palatable than what the original recipe was, what I found in like 1800s. But that relates back to the lemon trade through the docks and the sugar trade through the docks as well. So, you know, all the little dishes on there have some form of like inspiration from our surroundings. You know, I like to play on the whole trade route of Liverpool, and that's where the difference is as well between Liverpool and the Marengrass, because the Marengrass is a bastion of local Welsh Anglesey produce, whereas Liverpool is a bastion of Liverpool, if that makes sense. It really speaks about the city, as I say, the heritage of the city and where we are. And for me, I love that. As a Scouser, coming back to really showcase, I feel like I've gone off to learn and I'm coming back, you know, like, you know, when they used to send everyone out to go and kill a wolf and then come back a man, you know. I feel like I've gone away, learned my craft, and then I'm coming back to the city, which I'm a Liverpool lad, you know what I mean? I was dragged up in it, like off Edgworth Road and that neck of the woods. And, you know, I just love it. I love the fact that, you know, to come back and open a place on the Albert Dock, it's heritage sites, beautiful buildings. It's so powerful for our family, you know, like my granddad, who's like in the tenement apartments in town, which got knocked down, moved out to Halewood, and you know, me grandparents, stuff like that. Like, they're so proud of the fact that the grandson's got this spot on the Albert Dock where they all used to graft. They all used to be in there, you know, on the docks, like with proper work in it, you know. So it's, I don't know, it's nice. It's nice. It's nice for us. It's nice for the whole family. And I'm just made up to get back here and do what I love doing. I love the vibe of the city. You know, I loved looking out. I'm cooking. I put the kitchen in the restaurant so that I'm cooking, looking out on the docks and the water. It's beautiful. It could be in anywhere in the Med.
So, you talk about the A55. I'm not even going to ask how many speeding tickets you've got, because I know they're fucking ruthless. But you talk about, like, the fabric of Liverpool. And one thing that's kind of, and listen, I'm not being snobby about it, I've got my own personal taste, but, you know, I always prefer places that smell of the place of where they're from, as opposed to, like, you know, like a shiny front. And at least I'm not knocking, you know, but chain restaurants or big companies and stuff like that. But, you know, if it has got like that Liverpool accent, and talking about the Liverpool accent, because we're a bit wild. Last time I spoke to you, you had plans for the evening to kind of make it a little bit more.
Yeah, well, you walk into our restaurant. Yeah, it's high-end food, but it's not like you're walking into a white linen tablecloth place where you feel like you've got to whisper. I've got a DJ booth on. So we have a DJ on Friday, Saturday night, mixing the restaurant soundtrack. Do you know what I mean? You walk in there, there's a buzz. You walk straight into the kitchen. You can't be quiet. If you want somewhere quiet, you need to go somewhere else, because you've got the buzz of the kitchen. You've got the music on. And for me, I just wanted to be like, I went bought up with white tablecloths, mate. Do you know what I mean? It's not me.
But for those that don't know, do you want to tell the story of the Marengrass a little bit, just to give people an idea of where it's come from to where it's at now? Maybe just give people an idea of what you're about. Because I know, but a lot of people may not.
Yeah, so with the Marengrass, I moved there when I was 19. My dad bought an old rundown caravan site in Wales. He always wanted a caravan site, and he found this one on the back of, you know, after the recession. Got it for a stinker, like, you know, absolutely no one would buy it. It was up for sale for like 6 years. No one would buy it. And it had an old, like, little cafe on there because it used to be a garden centre, sort of like 15 years before that. and this little cafe was the tea room for the garden centre. So I was in Australia at the time, the alpha that bought it. He was like, right, get your arse home, you owe me loads of money plus your life. So get it back in and get in that kitchen, which I had to save my mum from because she was like, she was getting proper stressed making fried brekkies, do you know what I mean? So I came back and just started off, you know, got in the cafe and just was doing all day brekkies, mate, but just started like getting the local produce, just sourcing it properly. And then I started doing supper clubs and things like that. And it's not really like 19, 20 at the time. And then just started doing supper clubs. They went well. And just started adding more supper clubs, And then by the time I kept adding that, in the end, I had the restaurant. And then over the years, I've knocked walls down. I've changed the menu. I've gone from being like a breakfast place to fine dining, back to breakfast, back to fine dining. It's been like a real university for me. And then 2 years ago, we bought the farm. So we've got the pig farm and we grow our own veg, literally next to the next door to the Malumgrass. And then we've got the cookery school, which I've had to change up with COVID to be to this mock and more. I've done this like outside eating area because the Malumgrass is only suitable for like if you're the same size as a sardine. So with the COVID and the 2 meter rule, you can't get in there. So we don't got a big pitch sent up and changed the cookery school into like an outside restaurant. So it's that place has taught me to really just keep diverse, changing, and I suppose that's really helped. The Malumgrass has really helped with this COVID. Because over the years, mate, I've been flooded out twice. The roof's caved in on me once. My power's gone where I end up cooking everything on a barbecue outside for the guests. I was like, everyone, I had the full restaurant turned up. It was like, oh, yeah, tonight's barbecue night.
In the middle of November.
Honestly, God, I'm not messing. Yeah. So it's like, it's really, you know, in terms of being able to react and to have the ideas, it's really trained me well. I can just make things happen quite quick, and especially in the kitchen. That's why I'm good on Ready Steady Cook.
Oh, no, listen, I really wish you well with this, and I can't wait to get down. I mean, I was supposed to come down last week, but something come up, but now yeah. I'm really excited to come down with my friends, and I might even bring my missus to see what it's all about. Listen, we're short on time on this, so we'll round off where we started. Tiago then, lads, yeah?
I know. Well, you know what? I don't know about you, but I was getting itchy feet. Me like get going through. I said, oh, we can't go through a season again. We're not like sort of making much of an impact on the signings, and especially the other day. You know, I just felt we needed something to just give us a bit more of a. It's like employing a good sous chef, innit? You know, behind you, like just
ready to go. Or a new shiny pair of trainers. Isn't it exciting?
Yeah.
Brilliant to have you on. Thanks for coming on, mate. And listen, best of luck with Venture, and I'll see you soon. But we'll get you in for a proper chat sooner rather than later.
All the best.
All the best.
Hello, it's John Gibbons on The Weekender, and it's the Harry's insert. A lot of you will hear us talk about Harry's now. They've been partnering us for a while, and we really appreciate it. They're really good partners for us. So if you want to support us, do think about supporting them, not just because, obviously, they've been kind to the Anfield app, but because it's genuinely an excellent product. Harry's razors I've been using for a while now, since they very kindly sent me some stuff, and I'm still using it, and now I'm a customer of Harry's myself. Harry's razors, how do they do it? Well, there were two ordinary guys, Jeff and Andy, who were fed up with overpriced razors, started Harry's to fix it by taking less profit and selling directly to you. They're able to offer great quality products for a fair price. And that fair price is just $3.95 if you want to claim your trial set. $3.95. For all of that, you get the weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, which I can definitely endorse. It's one of the best shaving gels I have ever used, and I need it. I've got very sensitive skin. I'm a sensitive boy, as you all know. And a travel blade cover that I lost almost immediately. But if you can keep hold of it and you're a jet setter, I'm sure you can use that too. To get all of that for just $3.95, you just need to go to harrys.com/Anfield. That is harrys.com/Anfield. You just let them know how often you shave and things like that, and then they set you up on there. But obviously, if you don't like it after the trial set, you can cancel any time. But we think you will. Me and Neil both use it and really, really like their stuff. So nice one to Harry's, obviously, for endorsing. Awesome for supporting us, but obviously for giving me a great shave as well. Thanks very much. Back to the main show.
It's Neil Atkinson joined by Anita Abayomi to talk about Chelsea and to talk about my first question, Anita, is expectations. You know, all the money spent, all the exciting footballers, they all run around a lot, all you know, doing their young man attacking thing. You've got the old man of the sea at centre-half. What are the plans for the season? What would be a good season for Chelsea before we even talk about Sunday's game?
Right, so I think a good season and my expectations, they kind of contradict themselves. So I'll start off with a good season. So a good season, because it's Frank Lampard, he's still quite new, I would say a good season would be top four finish, maybe again challenge for another trophy, maybe the FA Cup, maybe the League Cup, who knows, but that would be a good, that would be a good season. My expectations, I would say I want to finish above Liverpool. Mm-hmm. So I want to at least be first or second, and I want a trophy. That's my expectations personally. Even if it's just the FA Cup or the Carling Cup, I was talking to my dad about it the other day. He said we can get the Champions League, and I said you're wishing like in your dream. But yeah, those are my expectations personally.
So there is a contradiction here, and it's dead interesting you mention his name, because I reckon that if you had, let's say, any of the established world top 10 managers, you can argue over the list who's on it and who isn't, but let's say you've got someone who has that sort of profile, maybe even a manager, and this is a wild shout, but someone like Ralph Hasenhüttl, you should all be saying it's first or second and a trophy, please. But Lampard still gets this grace.
Oh, my God. I had a feeling you were coming for him. Listen, he's still new. He's still
he is.
Game, and to be fair to him,
because he's
a Chelsea legend, us Chelsea fans, we give him so much of a leeway.
Exactly, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I've spoken to like rival fans and they're like, with the team you've got, you should really be challenging for the title, which is fair. And I think like if we had, even if we had a Leipzig manager, I think we'll probably be challenging for the league as well, you know.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, I've got to be honest with myself and I just think he can't do it.
So, well, I mean, we'll come back to that then. Would you rather, so three titles last decade, we're now into this decade. Would you rather win three more titles or win just the one with Frank Lampard and it takes him 3 or 4 years to get there?
I'd rather get the three titles.
So you're far too nice about Frank then, aren't you? You know, you don't mind what you've just said. You're being far too nice about Frank. If you genuinely think that if you got Nagelsmann in, he's a better shout than Hasenhüttl. You got Nagelsmann in. And it would be, you know, you'd be looking at them this season. You'd be saying, yep, these are our demands. These are our expectations. You've got to reach them. Whereas you are all basically, because it's nice to see Frank there and he's going a bit bald and he's trying his best. It's nice to have that. That's the situation. That's what you're saying to me.
I'm not even going to lie to you, Neil. Like, I'm very straightforward. That's exactly what I'm saying to you. Exactly what I'm saying to you. Like, it's Frank Lampard. Let's give him the benefit of the doubt. We love him. That's our legend, you know. That's how it is, honestly.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. I like it. I'm all for people having a nice time. Whatever happened, that's why I'm asking you what's the better time, you know? And if that's the nice time, if Frank is the nice time, then he's the nice time. And, you know, looking at the game against Brighton, it was a funny one. I think it was always going to be a bit of a slow start. There's something, isn't there, which we need to, Liverpool supporters need to acknowledge, not just about Chelsea, but about City and United as well, which is you had a really disruptive pre-season. So the reason why those games were Monday night was because it was just literally 30 days. So there's every chance, isn't that Chelsea, you know, do actually start a little slow. We'll get onto Sunday's game in a minute, but you're not expecting to see peak Chelsea for another couple of weeks. Even Silva's not even properly training yet.
Yeah, 100%. I said it with a lot of Chelsea fans. Like, we need to give it a bit of time. Of course, we've got, like, superstars in our team now in Werner and Havertz and, of course, Thiago Silva as well. But at the end of the day, everyone's just come back off holiday. We haven't really had much of a pre-season. Well, I think we had a pre-season game against Brighton already as well. And that didn't even go too well. So how we started on Monday, yeah, very slow. I understand that, but I'm not too mad about the fact that it was going slow as I am mad about how Frank Lampard set out his team, which I'm sure we'll probably talk about another day. But yeah, I'm not too mad about it going slow.
Is there something in, you mentioned how he settles his team there, that he is still, there's a little bit of a transition going on. So Azpilicueta doesn't start, James does and scores the great goal, but he can't use Chilwell on the other side because Chilwell's coming in and he's injured. Is that even going to take a little bit of time to transition, even given, you know, putting the pre-season conversation to one side to get these lads used to playing for Chelsea, used to play in the way in which Lampard wants to play?
Especially in regards to Chilwell, I think I don't really want to give Chilwell a lot of time to blend in, because he's in the Premier League. He's been in the Premier League. He knows what the Premier League's about. He knows what Chelsea's about as well. Like, he basically, you know, he wanted the move as much as we wanted him to come. So I would expect Chilwell to come in and slide straight in, because, you know, as you know, our choices of left back is not really, it's not really great at the moment. So I'd expect him to come in guns blazing. But as like with Thiago Silva and with Werner, and with, by the way, Werner has fit in so well already, just saying. But like with Thiago Silva, this is a much more faster pace that he will be playing at with in the Premier League than it was when he was playing with PSG. So yeah, I'd expect the whole transition to be very slow and very, you know, gradual. And I don't expect anything these first couple of games.
The Silva one's dead interesting. I wonder if what you might see in Silva is, we get this first load of games out the way, there's the next mad international break in October, and then it's game, Champions League, game, Champions League, game, Champions League, game. And there's two things Frank's got there, I think, which is he's got six interchangeable forwards with a ton of quality, but he's also got, I wouldn't surprise me if Silva plays the three Champions League games and maybe only one league game. Is that what you think's in his mind?
It probably is what's in Lampard's mind. I wouldn't blame him for that, because Silva is definitely used and experienced to the Champions League, and the Premier League will be definitely a bit too quick for him. However, I wouldn't want that. What I would want is some sort of consistency, because that's what we lacked last year, especially at the back, and that's why we kept leaking goals. If we find a partnership, and even if it is with Thiago Silva, because even though the Premier League is too quick for him, he is very, very experienced. So I don't expect him to be making as much mistakes, even though he is 36 going on 37, you know? I just don't expect the mistakes for him. I want consistency. I want two centre-backs.
So who do you think the two centre-backs will end up being? Will it be Zuma? Will it be Rudiger? Will it be Christensen?
That's the sticky part. So a lot of Chelsea fans disagree with me when I say it should be Rudiger. Just from an experience point of view, I think Rudiger works very well if he's got a very good partner in Thiago Silva. But the likelihood of us seeing Rudiger is very slim. So I would say it would be Zuma. Zuma, he's got the aggression, he's got the pace. But it just worries me that Zuma will leave Thiago quite exposed at the back, if I'm being honest with you. So I hope it's Rudiger, but it's likely to be Zuma.
Okay, and will it be, do you think it'll be a back three or a back four on Sunday's game against Liverpool?
If we play a back three against Liverpool again, I'm going to lose my mind. Let's just keep it back four. Let's keep it traditional, please. So I'm praying for a back four, please.
Do you think he'll do that, or do you think he'll look at the last couple of games? Liverpool struggled against a back three against Arsenal. Do you think he might think about going back three, or do you think you'll get your way and it'll be four?
I think if he goes back three, Alonso definitely has to start, which is kind of a bummer. At least Aspie will get a look in, because he'll be one of the centre backs in the back three. Aspie, Thiago, Zuma, most likely. And then we get Reece James. I mean, I wouldn't be mad at it. I think he probably will go safe with a back three. However, I just feel like with Liverpool, it's a bit dangerous to go back three, you know, because if one of our centre backs gets caught out, we're literally done for. And especially down the flanks, like, you guys know about your pace down the flanks. Yeah. Like, if you guys catch us out one time, we're done for. But with a back four, I think we're more solid with a back four. So I'm hoping he goes back four. But like you said, seeing how you guys played against Arsenal and played against us when we played a back three, even though we still lost, he probably will still go with a back three.
Other one I want to talk about before we do the forward lads is Kante. Great against Brighton. Arguably the only player who really hit his level for Chelsea against Brighton. That's not a criticism. Sometimes that's the way it goes. Ultimately, it's a season that'll be defined by how fit he can stay, really. That's fair, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. I think Kante, like, with him, like, his class is permanent. Like, he's an amazing footballer. What he does at Chelsea is sublime. Like, no one else can do it. He is a world-class player. The only world-class player we have at the moment in a squad, he's proven himself to be world-class, you know? So if he stays fit, he stays in the team. That's just how it goes. If he stays fit, he has a good season. That's just it.
His
fitness depends on the season. And yeah, if he goes injured, we're screwed, basically. In my opinion, we're really screwed, especially in the midfield.
I was about to say, that's where there's arguably the least amount of depth. There's Jorginho, he got an injury the other night. There's Kovacic. There's a lot of players in there, but none of them there's a lot of attacking midfielders, none of whom I'm particularly excited about. Loftus-Cheek can look brilliant when he gets going, but often doesn't. You roll your eyes. Barkley is hysterical. I mean, he scored against us in the past, so I should be careful. But there is a, you know, there's not the next name is that if there's no Kante, it's a problem.
Yeah, 100%. Like you said, we've got a lot of attacking midfielders, a lot of attacking options, but then it's just like, who's really going to hold a fort when the time comes to hold a fort in front of the back four, back five, you know? And we're always going to need that player. I think Kovacic is a very good midfielder. I love what he's about.
Yeah.
However, when it comes to driving the ball forward, I think Kante has that over him. When it comes to retaining the ball, Kovacic, yeah, of course. I would love to see a Kante and Kovacic pivot this season. Hopefully it goes well, because when we had Sarri, it didn't really go too well. But now that we've got Lampard, hopefully... we've seen glimpses of it last season when Kante was fit. So hopefully it goes well. However, my worry is if Kante gets injured, it would need to be a Jorginho and Kovacic pivot. And Jorginho is a liability in this league. I think he's a class player. He's got that registro that that is mainly predominant in Spain for a reason, because the league is slower in Spain. Jorginho, in my opinion, turns like a bus. I do not want him to hold that position for us this season. I wouldn't mind him coming off the bench. However, please, please, please let Kante stay fit so we have a decent season, especially in the midfield.
Last thing before we move on to talk about specifically your prediction for the game. You are part of the Gold Diggers podcast, which has been going for how long now? I've listened to a couple of them. I would describe them as lively.
Thank you. I'll take that compliment. Yeah, it's been going on for almost 2 years. So it'll be 2 years next year in March. Yeah, it's been going well. I really love those girls. They are the funniest bunch of girls I've ever met in my life.
There are a lot of jokes.
Yeah, literally, we're all about the banter. Like, we always run banter on each other. There's a lot of mutiny within the footballing society in Gold Diggers, because you've got the Manchester United, you've got the Liverpools, and even though, like, at socials, we all love each other, we go for a drink, have a laugh and stuff, but when it comes down to talking on the podcast, my goodness, it's just war, basically. So, yeah.
Yep, indeed. Frank Lampost being very, very funny indeed, and there's a lot of, yep, there's a lot of... Yeah, I'm going to say it's perhaps the most ruthless of your podcast options. So do check it out at some point. Check out Anita on Gold Digger podcasts. It is relentless for an hour on a pretty regular basis. Chelsea going to win? You're at home.
Do you know what? I feel like this is a setup. I'm on a Liverpool podcast.
That's a fair question. Yeah. We're playing a game. It's still a prediction. I'm not going to play it back in a week or anything like that. I'm going to ring you up with it. Go on, Liverpool going to win. Sorry, Chelsea going to win.
Yes, Chelsea are going to win.
Chelsea are going to win. Excellent stuff. Thank you very much to Anita. Back over to John.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot to everyone else. And it is back, and it's still John Gibbons, and I'm still joined by Lizzie Doyle, by Martin Fitzgerald, by Jay McKenna, and by Ben Johnson. And now we will look ahead to Chelsea from a Liverpool point of view. And I mean, it's always a big game, isn't it, Chelsea away, Lizzie? We've had good results there fairly recently. A lot of shockers the sort of 10 years or so before that. And even it's funny because even without fans and even all that, it still feels like, oh, you're going to Stamford Bridge, it's going to be hard.
Yeah, no, it still feels, it is a hard game. Like, you can be the best team in the country and Chelsea away is still a hard game. And, you know, I imagine we're going to go on to speak about it. We can't not about the fact that they've bought every player under the sun. And it's,
well, we've got Thiago, not everyone.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Well, I just think it's going to be a tough game. I think the fact that there's no fans will probably, well, it will help us. And you look at, like, the game last season, I thought that was quite a tough game. And, you know, when you look back at that season and where that game fell, and when I was editing that stuff, which we'd done to look back at the season, it was only then that I thought, oh God, yeah, that was a really decent win. And the season before that was when Sturridge had the equaliser win. It's not easy, and it's not going to be easy. And I think coming off the back of that Leeds game, I mean, they had to fight for that, didn't they? They did have to fight for those 3 points. They really did have to dig deep. And I think it would have given them a bit of a shock, a little bit of a rocket going into this game, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing, but they'll know what to expect. They'll know the difference in the game from playing Leeds. I think they'll be bang up for it, and I think as much as we can say it'll be hard, I still think they'll absolutely come out on top.
Yeah, hard to know what to look into last week's games, Martin, sort of either way, really. Liverpool, you know, get over the line as they always sort of seem to, but it wasn't without problems. But I thought, you know, actually, when you sort of watch it back, that second half we pretty much controlled and got sort of, you know, hit with a rare kind of Leeds attack. Chelsea, on paper, you think, 3-1 away at Brighton, it's a good result. And then you know, you again watch it and Brighton caused them sort of plenty of troubles, really. It's... We'll only really know, I think, what kind of how tough this game's going to be once it starts.
Yeah, they do. They do tend to be. I mean, certainly last season, they do tend to be a little bit better away from home. Chelsea. I don't know if that changed after the fans were not allowed in. But it's always a tough place to go. They've improved their team. You know, there's a little bit more experience with Lampard now. A little bit of needle between the clubs as well, which has come back. Yeah. After what happened at Anfield last year, little bit of the Timo Werner, transfer again just kind of raised that antagonism between the club. And even the other week when, you know, Klopp was saying, look, we can't just go around spunking a load of money, we're not Chelsea. So, you, obviously both teams are going to be up for it. It's, you know, two teams that will be, you know, trying to challenge this year. What am I hoping for? Just that we defend better than we did against Leeds. And I think if we do that, then you know, we should be fine. I think we did create a lot of chances. You'd certainly hope that you know, as well as a defence, some of the midfield, just a little bit more on it. I think we've had a little bit more game time than Chelsea have, and hopefully that will show. I wouldn't settle for a draw. I think we should be looking to win, but it will be tough.
It's the defensive stuff against Leeds was, a lot of it was concentration, Jay, which you'd thought... I mean, you'd certainly hope there won't be the case against the quality of the forward line that Chelsea have got. If they did underestimate Leeds a little bit, they certainly won't be, you know, looking at a forward line with Tino Werner, Kai Havertz in, and not knowing that they've got to be exactly on it.
Yeah, you can write Leeds off as, you know, just a one-off and first game of the season and all of that stuff if Liverpool are on it against Chelsea. If there's that sense of mistakes, or if, you know, mistakes leading to goals, it'd be worse is... That will become a bit of a pattern then and be something in a lot of clubs' minds, and will give them encouragement for how they should attack Liverpool or how they should play against Liverpool. It's an opportunity for us to send a statement as well, and those defenders, I hope, and midfielders, as Martin said, you know, should be hurting by that. They should be thinking, I'll show you. You know, I want them to turn up with a point to prove, and no doubt, I'm sure, with a point to prove to the manager, who will have flagged it with them. You know, the mistakes should not have been made, not even like underestimating, you know, it. Teams, they're basic things for players at this level. So, you know, I'm sure they'll want to go out and prove a point. If we don't, it is something to concern us. But I'm expecting they'll be on it. They will know these players will hurt them. They won't need as many chances as other clubs. You know, Werner and Havertz will want to make a bit of a statement for Chelsea, both not scoring in the first game of the season. They'll want to. You know, they'll want to take chances. They'll want to show why they were big money signing. So, you know, they'll be up for it. It will be interesting to see how I think even Chelsea approach this game as well, given the stuff with Lampard last season. I think, you know, is it Chelsea have made lots of signings here, so they might come out with a bit more than we'd expect than they would if they were just playing the Champions any other time, and particularly with fans in, you know, maybe being a bit more, let's wait and see what Liverpool have got. I think they might come out to try and make a bit of a statement, so the players are going to have to be on it from the very beginning, I think, because I think they'll want to send the message, you know, the money spent, Lampard will be under pressure to make them perform quickly. The players will be under pressure, the players will have professional pride, so I think that our defenders certainly are going to have to be on it. We might have to withstand a bit of pressure, you know, you're away from home against a team like that, you might have to withstand the pressure for a small while, so that'll be a test for them, but, you know, fingers crossed, and I'd expect that they would come through.
It's midfield, some interesting sort of selection choices he's got, Ben. He puts Fabinho on the bench, at the weekend or the last weekend, there was a bit of talk that he wasn't very happy with how he did in that mad 7-2 friendly. Keita comes in, does okay, I thought, without sort of necessarily sort of tearing up trees. Would you expect Fabinho to come back in this one? And if so, do you think it'll be Keita who make way?
Yeah, I think it's going to be Fabinho, Henderson, Wijnaldum nails on to play midfield. I think Keita will sit out. And I think mainly because Keita's great on the ball and he's great when we need to break teams down. But I think one of their goals last week, one of their lads just runs off a shoulder, he doesn't go with him, and then they break and score. And I think part of the problem last week was that we weren't just quite on it in terms of what happens when we lose the ball. We're a bit ragged first half, second half. People are saying, oh, Liverpool defence are terribly, this, that, the other. They had three shots, scored three goals. You know, that's not going to happen every week. But part of the problem, you can look at the defence, you can look at individual errors, but part of the problem was we were just a little bit spaced out. Didn't get quite enough out of the midfield. So I think he just goes with what is strongest working, and the people who he knows can cover the ground. And I think it's Fabinho, Henderson, Wijnaldum is most defensive and is strongest. And I think the game will be really interesting. I think it'll be dead interesting to see what Chelsea do, because if you look at what happened last week, and the temptation for Chelsea must be, let's get after these, because you can score goals against them if you get after them. Look, they're struggling, they're making errors at the back, the keeper's not having the best of times, blah 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 blah. But on the other hand, we won last week 4-3. Do you know what I mean? And most of the times teams come and have a go and think, we can get after these, we can stretch them, they're so high up the pitch, if we commit men forwards, we can really score a goal. I think every time teams have done that, we've won.
Yeah.
And so if they want to turn it into a basketball match, that's absolutely sound. But I think if they do that, the chances are that we'll win. So I think if they sit in, the chances are that we'll win. And I think it's really a tough game for to predict. It's a tough game for them more than it is us. And I just think it would be interesting to see how it sets up. And I agree with what everyone said. If Liverpool are on it, then they probably should have enough. But then the sort of tiny counter to that is the FA Cup game last season. Liverpool weakened slightly, but not, wasn't a second string. And I thought it was an even game. And then they score, and the game changes. You know, they scored the first goal. So, you know, we've been given some sloppy goals away of late. Sunday, you're just like, okay, let's make it hard. Let's make teams earn a goal. If they want to earn it, let's make them. And I think if we do that, we'll win the game.
Fabinho does well when he comes on as well, Lizzie. He obviously wins the penalty, but generally speaking, I thought sort of looked fairly sharp. But I think Fabinho, he's a funny fellow. He does seem like he needs a bit of a rocket sometimes, but coming on and help him win that game will be good for him, and I'm probably convince Jürgen, you know, to throw him in for this one.
Well, I think that was the rocket by not starting him. I think, like, yeah. I mean, I actually didn't see that much of pre-season, but what I heard is that he wasn't that great. And I think, fair play to Jürgen, I said all along he wouldn't start Henderson, and Henderson, I think Henderson's like the perfect player for Chelsea away, and I didn't expect to see him, but he did. He went with him. And I think Fabinho will come back in. I think he's one of our best midfielders. He's definitely in our best three mid. He's definitely in the best three, I should say. And it's a no-brainer that he comes back in for me. I don't think you'll see Keita. I think Ben's right. I think you need Genie and Henderson for this one. But I think, yeah, I don't know if any of you watched their game against Brighton, but like Brighton's done really, really well. And they did, and they had a good couple of chances, and it wasn't like a completely, utterly one-sided game. And what I will say is we're a whole lot better than Brighton. As much as they played well, I don't want to take anything away from them. And that's what makes, like, it sort of gives, not gives you hope, but like makes me feel confident, is because everyone's eyes were on Chelsea, everyone's eyes were on Timo Werner and Kai Havertz, and I was actually not that impressed. I don't get me wrong, they'll probably come good, the new players they need to bed in and all that, but not as scary as what you'd think. And that's what makes me think, like, we're a whole lot better than Brighton. We'll smash them. We'll be fine. We'll smash them, honestly. I like, the more to speak about it, the more confident I am, even though it'll be hard.
You know, John, can I just get in quick? You know,
of course.
Do you know Fabinho? When I seen him last week, and when I've seen him in pre-season, he's had like a mad hairdo. And he's like sort of...
He's a baldy
man. He's a baldy man, but he's letting it sort of weirdly grow. A bit like, so like he can't be arse shaving his head. And I remember Guardiola turned up at Anfield last year with like 5 days growth. And I said, yeah, we're going to murder these here because he can't even be asked to shave his head, the scruff. And I think there's something about a bald man's mindset if they're not on top of their baldness. I don't know what these two think. But, Martin, how long would you go without shaving your head?
Oh, geez, I mean, like a couple of weeks. But I've got a mate who's just done the same thing, who through sort of lockdown got through whatever that period is where it annoys you for a bit. And I had a pint with him the other week, and he had like a chocker's cap on. He looked like a fucking redneck. He had long hair. I thought I'd just met him from the Dukes of Hazzard. He had like long hair down to his shoulders, and he took his cap off, and obviously he's still bald. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? What's happened to you? I'm with Ben on this. You need to have a fucking thing. So
if he turns up, he's fully baldy.
With a cap on.
Play your first half with a cap on.
If he turns up with a plaid shirt and a cap and a pair of boot cut jeans, then lump on Chelsea. But if he turns up in a Liverpool kit and his head shaved, we'll be alright.
Win the league,
you're
the man of the match.
Yeah.
What should also help us, Martin, is that
is that he's not allowed to play wearing them clothes.
No, it's that their goalie's packed in. Can't be arsed saving stuff. They paid about $100 million for him or something. And I don't know, he just looks like he's having an existential crisis with the whole thing. Maybe a bit like your mate.
Yeah, I've never seen him in the same room at the same time, to be honest. So you might be on something there. And even that's why he didn't go off when he was substituted. I still think someone should have made a film about that. Someone should have made a film without a book about that, because that was weird. Just get off. You have to remember, I mean, you know, they've got the name Chelsea, right? And and maybe it is the needle, but I can't remember how many points we finished ahead of them last year. We have a much better team, and I think we're the settled team, you know, going into this. But hopefully Thiago's up in them stands wearing whatever the fuck he wants, by the way. And everyone's going, we better be good here, because he could play in all of our positions next week because he's won 7 league titles. It's like we just signed Celtic. So even Alisson's going to be like, well, I should probably think about saving a few this week because that fella up there has won 7 on the spin. So, yeah, as long as he's in the ground, I think we'll be all right. And he'll scare the shit out of them because he's won more league titles, I think, than they've ever won anything.
I'm not sure where to go with this, Jay. I've been completely lost here. Say something about this footy game.
Fucking hell, mate. I don't know. Jürgen Klopp should just fucking clip this and just play it in the dressing room. Joe, he's fucking watching you, so just fucking win, you dickheads.
Take your cap off, Fabinho, you dickhead.
Imagine, mate, we're going to be watching Sky, and if Fabinho gets off that team bus wearing the fucking cap, we're going to be like, for fuck's sake, oh, he's had a shit. Benji, I'll all be running to Stamford Bridge. I think This is a test for Liverpool as well. You know, your league titles generally are won by, you know, those at the top, how you perform against the top six, the big six, how you know, and it's going away from home. Your home ones, you'd expect to get a result, mainly wins, maybe a couple of draws, but away from home, going there and winning is a statement. And, you know, we've got other clubs, teams, the media will be looking for that wobble. They'll be looking for Leeds to be a pattern. They'll be looking for Liverpool to turn up at Chelsea, and Chelsea do Liverpool, and we've got Arsenal to come, and then it'll be a crisis. We can't win games. So I think it's a big statement for us to make, and I'm sure Klopp will be saying that to the players as well. You know, this is where you win league titles again. It's going to Stamford Bridge. It's doing it there. It'll be interesting to see how we set up if he does make any changes in midfield. The forwards looked up, certainly the two wide men looked up for it. So, you know, a bit more of them banging in goals will be great, and we just got to do our bit at the other end of the pitch is the challenge. And the goalie is, and on that, Martin's jokes aside about the idea Thiago might play in goal one week, but, you know, there's some of them where it's just not been as cohesive at the back between the centre-halves and the goalie at times. So, you know, I think Alisson made a mistake, didn't he, against Leicester that time, and was like, you know, I'm going to bounce back from it. Van Dijk has done the same. It's like, well, okay, is the week now where you just need to, you know, be at it and do your bit. Be really, really nice to keep a clean sheet for that reason. If we can keep a clean sheet, you know, I think it'll be a tight game anyway, but keeping a clean sheet will be that statement. Look, you know, no matter what firepower you've got, and there's an argument that Chelsea might have, you know, certainly some of the best attacking talent in the league now, that if we can keep that quiet, then, you know, we can go anywhere else and do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Okay, I'll ask you for a score prediction before we go. Start with you, Ben.
2-0, Liverpool.
Brilliant. Lizzie?
2-1, Liverpool.
Oh, a bit tighter. Martin?
I'm going to go 1-0, Liverpool.
Tell you what. Jay?
2-0, Liverpool.
2-0 Liverpool, that does make me feel slightly better. I'm going to go 2-0 Liverpool as well. Listen, I hope you've all enjoyed this. That has been the weekend on the day of the most exciting transfer since Martin replaced Ben Jono on the ratings. We've all enjoyed ourselves. Hope you have too. Hope you're as giddy as we are. Up the Reds this weekend. Thanks very much. Sports Social Podcast Network.